Hello, this is Nick. We'll be discussing a spiritual topic, and the topic that I'll be discussing today is actually a question from the Path of Knowledge questionnaire. I found it to be particularly interesting and took quite a bit of contemplation to really fully grasp, although I've heard this question in different forms in many ways throughout the program thus far. Thinking more deeply about it allowed a more deeper understanding, so I can share that today. So the question here is, how does the limited know the unlimited? And one of the great things about the Path of Knowledge is we learn how to answer these types of spiritual questions, and we make sure that we're not answering an invalid question or a question that has ignorance built into the question itself. So it's important to analyze each word of the question so that we can provide a satisfactory response. So if we take the first word, how, this is a process question. So what is the process by which the limited knows the unlimited? The next word is the limited. How does the limited know the unlimited? And the limited, I think all of us can understand to some degree. Many of us come to spirituality because a sense of separateness, individuality, searching for something greater than ourselves. We feel that we are separate from all of those and all of the things around us. And spirituality brings a promise of something greater than the individual. And some paths talk about non-duality and a merging of the individual with the whole. And that is particularly attractive to many people. And that brings us to spirituality. So we erroneously think that we are individuals and that we're limited and that we are this body, mind, ego, etc. So that, I believe, is what this question is referring to when they say limited. So we can all relate to that term, limited. We can compare that with the last word in this question, which is unlimited. So again, to repeat, how does the limited know the unlimited? So the unlimited, this is a much more difficult term to define, because the second that I begin to define it, it will become limited. But again, if we think about our individual sense of self, our mind-body individuality that is seeking something greater than ourselves, this unlimited is what that's referring to. And the unlimited could also mean all of this potential infinite experience, knowledge, all that there is to know, the whole existence itself. How can we know all of that? Is it possible? That's a whole nother question, but how can we know all of that unlimited? And in the Path of Knowledge, the unlimited, we find that we are, in fact, that. We find that we are the experiencer of all things. So this question then is asking, how does the limited know that unlimited aspect of the existence? And the word know we should talk about a little bit as well. So know is specifically part of the word knowledge. And when we use knowledge in the Path of Knowledge program, we're referring to an experience that's organized within our memory or within the memory. And knowing is essentially a experiencing or a seeing or a sensing of a particular arising. So that is what knowing is. So if we look at this question now, again, with all of those definitions in place, we see that the question is actually invalid and breaks down. So we see that what is the process of this limited individual knowing or experiencing that which is unlimited? And so immediately we see that this question actually breaks down, because if the unlimited becomes knowable, it will no longer be the unlimited. And many of us will also think, it will kind of think in parallel to the question of how does the limited or the individual or how does one know the experiencer? This question comes up in many other times in various settings and questions during the Path of Knowledge program. And the reflex answer that many of us will give is that we know the experiencer by being the experiencer. But if we investigate that question, that answer a little bit further, if we just say that reflexively, there's still some ignorance that might be buried there. And I've seen that in myself. And so if I say that I know the experiencer by being the experiencer, that is still assuming that there is an I, an individual, that is experiencing the experiencer by being the experiencer. And so it's partially correct, but there's some partial ignorance there, that there's still a belief of an individual. And we have to realize at a deeper level that the individual is actually an appearance. It is actually an experience that's arising to the experiencer. So there is no separate individual or person that is suddenly becoming the experience. That is still ignorance. The individual is appearing to the experiencer. So the experiencer can only be itself. It can't know anything. This existence can't know anything. It can only be itself. There's no knowing involved here. So that word know really, I think, is the linchpin in this question. And the other thing that we're seeing here is that we are mixing duality and non-duality. And anytime we do that, we know that we're on the wrong path with our question. So again, duality cannot know non-duality. So we've taken this question apart quite a bit. Now, we haven't gotten into the science of how the limited knows experience, the seeming experience, how does that arise and appear to a limited form or a limited mind and body? That's a little bit of a deeper discussion and a longer discussion. But what it comes down to is that the senses are what filters the potential or filters the incoming vibrations in a way that is beneficial for this particular individual. And so it's built for the individual for survival purposes. And so if this individual was wanted to experience the unlimited, how could that even be possible? Because the senses are the only way by which we experience anything, whether that be the five senses, our internal senses, any of the senses, that's the only way that we can experience. And those experiences are built for the purpose of survival, and they are too arising as experience. So how could something limited suddenly be able to present that which is unlimited? There would be no benefit to the individual if they were to be able to experience the entire unlimited existence. And I believe this is actually part of the Bhagavad Gita as well. I do recall hearing that in the Bhagavad Gita when Krishna reveals himself to Arjuna. And I think it's not only the Bhagavad Gita, but I think many other religions talk about this, not talk about it, but are actually based upon this idea of the unlimited and how the unlimited limits itself in order to appear to the individual or to humans. We see this actually in Christianity. We have the God who's unlimited, who sends his son, avatar of the God, you know, Christ, to appear to the people and to teach them the lessons that the unlimited God wants them to learn. And of course, much of the Bible is actually can be interpreted in this non-dual perspective. In fact, Jesus himself says in one of the Gospels, even before Abraham, I am, which is a really profound statement, actually. He's basically saying that even before that first prophet of all of the Abrahamic religions, Christianity, Judaism, Islam, that there was in fact this sense of I am, or this experiencer, this unlimited experiencer, and he is appearing as a limited form to teach this to the people of that time. And unfortunately, we again, just like how society does, has corrupted a lot of the teachings, not only in Christianity but many other religions. But I do wonder that if we were able to view, and we're getting off on a tangent here, but if we were able to actually interpret some of these teachings from that non-dual perspective, how much better off we would be. But that, again, that is a wish that will not come true, but it's something to reflect upon. And it's very interesting that the more I learn about non-duality, the more I see that in the texts that I read or the texts that I was familiar with growing up. But the bottom line here, again, is that the limited cannot know the unlimited. Again, because the unlimited, the moment it becomes knowable, it becomes an experience that's been filtered by the senses, and thus it is no longer unlimited. So I think that covers that question to a satisfactory degree. And there was one other question that came up in one of the Telegram settings. It was particularly interesting to me as I thought more about it. On the surface, it didn't seem all that interesting to me. But the question was, are there accidents or are there only incidents? Again, I ignored this for the first, you know, couple hours it was up there. But then I started thinking about it more and it really became quite interesting. So again, just like in the previous question, we need to define our terms. So what is an accident? So an accident is something that occurs which is undesired or unintended and has a lot of negative overtones associated with it. An incident, on the other hand, is a simple occurrence or an arising. It has less of that negative emotional overtone to it, and there's a lack of expectation there. There's just simply an occurrence. And that's what we call an incident. So, or an incident, I should say. So, in terms of this word accident, in order for there to even be this concept of accident, we quickly realize that there needs to be an expectation that something goes according to plan. And there must be somebody there to make that expectation. So, for instance, if somebody is taking a trip from New York City to Los Angeles and they're flying and the expectation there is that the flight's going to go according to plans, there won't be any problems, there won't be any delays, and there certainly won't be something as terrible as a plane crash or an accident. But when we find that something like that, some tragedy, we will call it, happens, some accident happens, everybody will say, what a terrible accident this was. This was unintended. What happened here? What went wrong? This did not go according to plan. And that requires, again, someone to have an expectation about how something should be going with this experience or in this existence. Whereas the incidence has that expectation and the person that expects it kind of removed from the definition. So if we believe ourselves to be an individual and we have desires and expectations about how things should be going, we create accidents, actually. Who's to say how things are supposed to be going in this existence? We are the ones that overlay these negative overtones and overlay our expectations on these arisings or on these incidents within our experience. But if we use our awareness and we see that we are the experiencer of all of these things, we are experiencing without any bias, without any expectation. The experiencer is not able to say, this needs to go this way, that needs to go this way. Oh my gosh, what a terrible accident. That is not what happens when one has realized that they are the experiencer of all of these things. So the moment that there's disidentification with the individual expectations, we see that there are only incidents that are occurring. There's only arisings that are coming and going. We find that the question, again, it's not that the question is invalid, but it allows us to go deeper using our non-dual perspective. And when we have self-realization, we see that everything is actually perfect the way that it is, that there's arisings and passings that are coming and going based on their own rules and regulations. There's no expectation about how it should be going. Things are just happening. They're just arising. And so that's where a lot of spiritual teachings will say this, and sometimes it's tough for people who have not had that self-knowledge. When you hear this from somebody, whether it be a doctor or a teacher or a psychologist, oh, everything, just take it as it comes. It's okay. Just relax. Everything, it's all good. Everything's good. When we hear that, we don't believe it when we're living as that individual with expectations, right? Because it isn't good. We have expectations about how things should be going. But when we have that self-knowledge, there's freedom from that bondage of expectation. And we realize that those same expectations, that same individual who has those expectations, that's also arising and coming and going. And the experiencer has nothing to do with that. Now, we can take this even further, of course, and say, and when we enter the realm of oneness or non-duality, we also see that the experiencer is not separate from those experiences that are arising, those expectations and the individual. There's actually only oneness. There's only this here and now, this experiencing that's occurring. And you can even ask yourself, when we go even deeper here, is anything actually arising to begin with? If we believe, if we know all of this to be an appearance, which is coming and going, which is illusory, dependently arising, does anything actually arise in the first place? Or is there simply just potential and possibility for it to be there? And when we go back to the question, are there accidents or incidents? The question again starts to fall apart. Well, there's no such thing as accidents, actually. And at an even deeper level, there's no such thing as even incidents or arising. It's all illusory to begin with. So I thought that the question initially was very innocent and I didn't have much interest in it. As I thought more deeply about it, it did become a much more interesting discussion.
Thank you.